Our lecturer is Paul South Seeley of Portland, Oregon. Mr. Seeley is a member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts. The lecture today is entitled, The Origin and Power of Thought. We are most fortunate to have a man who has a background of experience in the teaching, practice, and demonstration of this practical religion, a religion for those who are willing to think. I know that the words you are about to hear will be beneficial to all. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Seeley. Thank you, Mr. Eisenhower. My friend, good afternoon. Not long ago, I was given a book, the author of which writes with complete assurance on such unusual subjects as life beyond gravity, a world without distance. That's where I hear the practically instantaneous communication between any two individuals on this planet is in the offing. And it is said by some that the oncoming generation of computing machines may perhaps be smarter than its makers. These things, of course, interest us. They have to do with the utilization of physical forces. And all these developments show that the human mind is surrendering some of its self-imposed limitations. But there are limitations that are inherent in physical forces that you and I need to be mindful of. There are no physical forces, nuclear, chemical, electrical, mechanical, or otherwise, that offer any answer to the simple question, where is happiness? Where is security? Where are the forces that can drive out of human consciousness criminal desires, racial unrest? And where are the forces that mankind can utilize and depend upon successfully to challenge those murderous physical forces of disease that are today destroying some 50 million people every year on this planet? The answers must be found to these questions unless mankind is to be abandoned to an endless round of frustration and destruction. And some of our physical scientists recognize this. A few months ago, Dr. Linda Lindblom said that if an individual is ever to find security, here or hereafter, you have to find it in the spiritual, not said he, in the physically scientific. I should like to tell you a little of the life story of one of the greatest physical scientists of our time. Now, after spending the larger part of his human lifetime becoming acquainted with and harnessing that great physical force that we call electricity, he came to see that it is a far greater force, a purely intelligent force that we all need to understand. It is in June 1889 that the French liner got to the port of New York. Out of the stage came a young man, undersized, deformed, a political refugee from the Germany of Bismarck. He had no money, so practically no English, and no assurance of employment.
On the ship's papers, he was listed as a mathematician and researcher. The immigration officer admitted Charles T. Steinmetz with serious misgiving. He found a factory job at $12 a week. And there his great genius soon outshone all others' physical limitations. The then young General Electric Company at Schenectady, New York, hid him, searched him out, gave him a place on his engineering staff, and he soon became his supreme thought on all matters electrical. He was a very kind man. His life was full of deeds of kindness to little children, to the unfortunate, and to those about him. Religiously, he was regarded as an agnostic. But in his more mature years, his viewpoint showed that this was a misnomer. So happened that in the 1920s, I lectured at Schenectady, New York. And there I met an engineer who, like Steinmetz, was on the staff of the General Electric. They were friends. This man was a student of Christian science. And he told me that Steinmetz had a copy of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to Scriptures, written by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. And he also said that on one occasion, when Steinmetz was asked to define electricity, his reply was, "The best definition of electricity I have ever seen is on page 293 of Science and Health." Of course, I wish I could say to you that I personally heard Steinmetz make that statement. I cannot. But I'm perfectly confident that his engineer friend quoted him accurately. And what is the definition of this great physical force? Electricity. Written by Mrs. Eddy. Proved by Steinmetz. It is this. Electricity is the sharp surplus of materiality, which counterfeits the true essence of spirituality, or truth. The difference being that electricity is not intelligent, while spiritual truth is mind. And here the word mind is spelled with a capital to differentiate it from what we ordinarily think of as the human mind. Sometimes good, many times bad, and many times very bad. But this is the mind. There is primal substance. Genuine intelligence. And this is what he saw, and apparently Steinmetz recognized that the unintelligent force of electricity, as well as every other physical force, is the counterfeit of the genuine, the basic, the indestructible, the immutable force of intelligent mind. Later, in the 1920s, Steinmetz was quoted in Forbes magazine in regard to his views of the future. And there he said, "I think the greatest discovery of the future will be along spiritual lines. Someday," said he, "people will learn that material things do not bring happiness." Then the physical scientists will begin to turn their laboratories over to the study of God and prayer and those spiritual forces which as yet have been hardly guessed at. So what are spiritual forces anyway? Do you know? Could you explain them to a little child? We use them every day. Every right-thinking parent endeavors to awaken his child to discover that in his consciousness he is always present, the moral, spiritual thought force of honesty, of kindness, of justice, of goodwill. And the parent endeavors to help the child recognize, contrarian, be obedient to these basic intelligence forces. And if the child does that, he finds something that we call character. If the child doesn't make those forces, the parent can't make them, but something makes them. And that something continues to make them. And to make them continuously available to every individual consciousness, every flesh. What is that something? The basic intelligent mind of us all. And of course it rules and governs by its forces, and they are infinite in its idea. The good spiritual forces that animated Abraham and Moses, Jacob, the Psalmist, the prophet, Christ Jesus. What is it that spiritual forces that have risen to life in the consciousness of men today, a greater sense of social, economic, and racial justice? And what the spiritual forces can or ever will bring to life and perpetuate world peace? The definition of electricity, quoted a few moments ago, is scientifically accurate. It is quite capable of truth, which means that if the great basic positive mind and its forces are the great original, genuine thought of the universe and man, and if the individual begins to understand this simple basic fact, he can begin to utilize these forces to protect his life, his integrity, his utility against the murderous forces of ignorance, materiality. And this has been done on occasion. Mother of ours, Cleveland, a sizable family, became interested in Christian science. She found its teachings could be applied to every human need of herself, her children, her husband. One evening, she was washing the family dishes in the kitchen sink. And she thought of something in the refrigerator that stood just up of her. She wanted to get it. And she turned. And with one wet hand, grasped the handle of the refrigerator's door. At that moment, she remembered that the water was running full force in the sink. She wanted to turn it off. And she turned, and with the other wet hand, grasped the faucet. Due to its effective wiring, a terrific shock of electricity went through her entire body. She was numb. She tried to call out, but could only utter a low moan. something within his head, you cannot communicate with any person. But you can find God. God is as near to you as consciousness and thought. God is a continuing source of every worthy thought you can ever have. Do you remember? She studied in science and health that electricity is a counterfeit of the genuine, basic, intelligent force of mind. And that it's the natural function of positive mind, not only to cause, but to maintain the continuity of its own evidence, the real consciousness and life of man. In an instant, her hands were free. There were no answers, is that? What is this proof? It proves that in the mind, the enlightened consciousness of man can be found mind-empowered ideas that will lift that consciousness above fear, awakening and evil, and give to it a confident trust in the ability of causative intelligent mind to protect and to maintain the harmony of its own will. Now, wouldn't you expect basic cause to be able to do that? That young mother found within her mind, enlightened consciousness, something of the saving Christ. What is the saving Christ? It's the true idea of God, basic cause. And the true idea of man, the effect of that cause. And the true idea of the saving forces of intelligent mind. And their ability to protect and to preserve and to maintain the harmony, utility, and continuity of man. Years ago, you remember that the Russian cosmonaut, German Peacock, put to the Earth from 17 times. Soon after his return to Earth, he was quoted as saying that in all those 17 orbits of the Earth, he hadn't been able to see God anywhere. And the inference that he was to convey was, this proves there is no God. Well, of course, he'd been misinformed in regard to the nature of God. No one has ever physically seen God, and no one ever will. No one has ever physically seen the principle of mathematics, and no one ever will. For the physical eye can only see the things that are temporal, beautiful, perishable. You can't see justice. You can't see kindness. You can't see honesty. But you don't doubt that they exist and are vital forces. No more can you physically see that which causes them. Immaterial, universal, causative mind. If Peter had been willing, as he orbited the Earth, to ask himself, what is it that I am depending upon every instant to provide me with thoughts of courage, foresight, clear judgment, patience, cooperation with others? He might perhaps have sensed something of a presence of a great universal causative mind that he was depending upon to provide for him the thought without which he could not possibly have accomplished his well-done mission. When our major super orbited the Earth in 1963, he didn't expect physically to see God, and he was very conscious of the presence of the great Father mind. When he was over the Indian Ocean, he poured out spontaneously to his tape recorder what he found in his consciousness. Great sense of gratitude for the presence of the all-intelligent one, providing for him courage, fearlessness, faith, hope, clear judgment. Then he prayed the prayer of earnest desire, that his thought might be become more open to recognize the presence of the positive thoughts and ideas of the mind that is thought, and so being able to live a better life. Then he expressed his complete confidence that the great universal mind of us all would make known to his dear ones at home his security and assure them of his safe return. And where did these thoughts come from? He didn't originate them, manufacture them. He found them within. His mind enlightens consciousness. Why does man exist anyway? Man exists for the most rational purpose conceivable, namely, individually to evidence, be the proof of, the presence and activity of the one indestructible substance, all intelligent mind. There's a Latin phrase familiar to many of you, I am sure. Sine qua non. Literally interpreted it is, without which not. God is that. Without which not one of us could ever have a worthy thought. For every genuine good morning, every heartfelt thank you, every act of unself-kindness, evidences the activity within our consciousness of the one good mind, the one genuine mind that we call God. In Corinthians 4 says, we are not sufficient of ourselves to think anything. Our sufficiency is of God. In other words, God is the only cause. The real individuality of man is the effect of that cause. And if the function of the cause continuously to provide everything that is essential for its own effect, in order that the effect may be the continuing evidence and proof of its cause. In 1805, the Lewis and Clark expedition made its way from the central west to the Pacific northwest. It opened up a vast area for migration and development. The success of the expedition is due in a very large measure to the wise guidance of a young Indian woman, Sata Sewiya. She led the expedition over difficult mountain passes through the lands of hostile Indians. She found food and drink where no one else could find them. No member of the expedition hesitated to follow her wise leading simply because she was a woman. Occasionally, I hear of someone who is reluctant to take Christian science seriously because its message has come through a woman. I wonder what the line of reasoning is. Does anyone really believe that the great basic intelligent cause provides intelligent enlightenment from man and withholds that enlightenment from woman? Really, is the thoughts and the ideas of the perfect human progress down to the centuries could be accurately evaluated, it would be found that a very large part of them had first appeared in the enlightened thinking of women. Why was Mrs. Eddy the messenger for Christian science? There's no mystery about it. It was simply because her consciousness was less darkened, confused by ignorant, materialistic beliefs. It wasn't dominated and controlled by theological dogma. It was more open to discern the simple spiritual facts of being that constitute the very substance of the Bible. As a child, she became acquainted with the scriptures, studied them, loved them. And she found that the Master had said very simply, "The works that I do shall ye do." And she was sure he meant that. And at a very early age, she determined to put forth an honest, consistent effort to try to discover how he had accomplished his great healing work. And see if perhaps she might be able to do some of those healing works too. And she never lost that objective. It was just about 100 years ago that she made her first prayer for healing through reliance on spiritual forces. It was in the winter of 1856 in Swanston, Massachusetts. She fell very heavily one day on the ice. She picked up unconscious, taken to a nearby home. A physician was called. He diagnosed the difficulty as a very serious internal injury. Expressed doubt that she would ever recover. Next day, she was taken to her own home, began to recover consciousness. As soon as she did, she called for her Bible, opened it to the healing of a man afflicted with palsy, healed in an instant by fast season. She read carefully about healing. She began to reason how it had been accomplished. She began to see that the same mighty forces of mind that neutralized and nullified those mindless, ignorant, physical forces and destroyed that ignorant thing called palsy were just the same today as they were then. And that her great, intelligent forces of mind was able to protect and to preserve her harmony, her utility, her continuity. When her recognition of these simple spiritual verities brought a complete healing to the consternation of the physician and her friends, she of course realized that she'd only gotten a glimpse, but it was a glimpse of something basic, the supremacy of basic, intelligent, positive mind and its ability to protect and to preserve its own witness, the real being at man. Then she devoted a number of years to intense study of the scriptures. And out of all this intense study and research came what we now call Christian science. His textbook, already referred to, Science and Health of Truth and Scriptures, was printed in 1875. It's a book of 700 pages, 18 chapters. What's in the book? Ideas. How much interested are you in ideas? How much do you want to be free of ignorance? Ignorance of God, basic thought. Ignorance of mind, the effect of that thought. ignorance of the law, forces by which that cause naturally, continuously works. Not only cause, but to protect and to preserve and to maintain its own evident life. Thousands of people have been healed, as I said, simply by the reading of this book. Because their thoughts have changed from fear of ignorant evil to an intelligent trust in the basic intelligent cause of man. Then to rise in Tokyo, then to the workshop a few years ago, his noon hour, he was found a good book. It's got a copy of Science and Health. Never seen it before. You opened it, read a line or two, and liked it. You asked the price. Then he discovered that he had practically no cash, or very little cash, with him. And if he bought the book, he wouldn't be able to buy his lunch. He hesitated, but not for long. He bought the book. Went without his lunch. It was the best investment he ever made. He studied it. No, my friends, no one is ever going to gain an understanding of the basic things of being in a hurry. You've got to be willing to ponder, to check, to make the substance of the genuine idea that exists to enlighten, to destroy ignorance with intelligence and understanding. He was willing to do that. And it wasn't very long before he was completely healed of nearsightedness of 23 years. Something. Thick glasses were put off. They've never been put on. But what changed? The visual organism from a distorted condition to a normal one. Something did. And that something was the ideas in which the might of intelligent mind is present and active. And those ideas which he found in Science and Health destroyed his fear of ignorant evil. And in his place and shown a confident intelligent trust in the continuous ability of his continuous cause to provide for him the ability to discern, to see, undistortable by unintelligent material forces. He's become an ardent student of Christian science in Japan. We not only need so much, well, I should tell you, regard to science and health, before we go on, Science and Health is easily available to everyone in nearly all public libraries, and of course, in all Christian Science reading rooms. It's been translated into numerous foreign languages: German, French, Swedish, Spanish, Danish, Dutch, recently into Russian and Portuguese. And the captive paperback edition is available. Remember, what's in the book is ideas that destroy ignorance with the power of intelligence. The intelligence that is their source, their origin. Ideas don't come out of the dust, you know. They're not made out of the molecules of the atoms of matter. They're made of the substance of their continuing source, immaterial intelligent mind. And they're just at hand. The Japanese gentleman found. We not only need so much better to understand God, the great basic intelligent cause, but we need to understand the opposite of God. The Master called this opposite the devil. Why do we need to understand something of the devil?
because all of our troubles derive, not at all, from the great basic intelligent cause. They derive from our ignorant belief in, and subservience to, this negative, ignorant, material sense of cause. And the Master made it very plain that the devil is the opposite of God. It's exactly what the opposite of God has to be. God, the great self-existent, universal, all-intelligent, positive mind. The devil, a negative, an unintelligent sense of mind. That sense of mind that would fill our consciousness with fear, worry, hatred, selfishness, all forms of sin, sickness, and so on. What do we do? Can we do about it? Well, we can do a great deal about it. The Master taught and Christian Science teaches that every individual is endowed by his intelligent source with the ability to differentiate between the negative, unintelligent, trouble-producing thought and the positive, the genuine, the harmony and self-producing thought. He has the ability to resist the former, accept the latter. The Master put it, we must burn the tear. Gone is weak. I know in my own experience, one of the happiest days of my life was when I really came to see that I was endowed with the ability that could never be taken from me to differentiate between all of these negative, ignorant, trouble-making thoughts and the intelligent, the genuine, the harmony-producing thoughts that are native and natural to the only real consciousness of man. How does the devil work? This negative mind talks, argues, submits. To what? To any consciousness that will listen. Part three, he listens. Plenty of trouble follows. But it'll talk to you and me, anytime. But we don't have to listen. Story is told of an imp of the devil. The devil said to this imp one day, you go and make Mr. A sick. Off the imp went, soon he came back. The devil said, did you make Mr. A sick? No. Why not? He wouldn't listen. Well, what did you do? I placed my shoulder, I whispered into his ear, and I said, you're not feeling well today. You've got a pain in your back. You're feeling run down and feverish. You better go home and go to bed. You're going to be a sick man. And the devil said, what did Mr. A do? He said, cut. And he brushed me off his shoulder. He wouldn't listen. Well, the devil said, you go back. You perch on his shoulder, you whisper in the ear, and you say, I am not feeling well today. I have a pain in my back. I'm feeling run down, feeling. I think I better go home, go to bed. I believe it's going to be a sick time. Off the imp went, soon he came back, dancing with glee. I got him. He accepted my evil suggestion, believing. They were his thoughts. He saw him in bed, but fully convinced he was a sick mortal. Well done, said the devil. I give you a promotion. I'll make you the instructor of all the little imps. Well, the point of that is that when those suggestions are put in the first person, I am not feeling well, and so on. They were more deceptive. Mr. A and his ignorance accepted them, believing they were his thoughts. But they weren't his thoughts at all. How can the great, basic, all-intelligent mind ever conceive or impart to man the thought of, I am not feeling well today? That mind isn't altogether intelligent. It doesn't conceive or originate or impart any sense of this thought. Well, Christian science is helping us to begin to utilize consistently day after day and hour after hour and moment after moment our mind-provided ability to rule out of our consciousness these negative, unintelligent, trouble-making thoughts. Why, what chance does ignorance have before the forces of intelligence? That's all that our troubles are made up of. Ignorant thoughts. This is a perfect antidote. Great, basic, intelligent mind is able to protect itself and all of its positive, intelligent ideas. Just as honesty is a perfect antidote for dishonesty. Kindness, the perfect antidote for cruelty. Justice, the perfect antidote for injustice. So, intelligent mind provides a perfect antidote for every negative thought. But we've got to use that. Claim that. Christian science reminds us rather often of the Master's simple statement, what I say unto you, I say unto all. Watch. Well, what does he want us to watch? Surely something more than television. Is there anything more important for you and me to watch than our thoughts? Sooner or later, everyone then. But Solomon was absolutely right when he said, of man centuries ago, as he thinketh, so is he. It's a statement of law. No, nobody can fix it or bypass it. And so, Christian science is helping the students to watch their thinking, and every time they discover an evil suggestion whispering to them, I'm not feeling well today. I'm feeling grouchy today. I'm feeling worried, irritated, distressed today. Or perhaps I feel a little like pain today. Whatever the suggestion is, lies the eye before it. What? Guess yourself. What is that? Well, the only thing that can say that is the negative, unintelligent sense of mind. Accept it, if you will, suffer the consequences. Reject it, and you'll be liberated from the consequences. A few years ago, in British Columbia, a woman was sorely afflicted. She went to the best surgeon, doctor she could find in the area, and they all agreed that she had spinal arthritis. And they encouraged her to become resigned to sleeping on doors at night, sitting in a wheelchair during the day. Then they said, we'll engage the nurse from the local arthritis society to come and give you some treatment. They might help a little. Well, she thought the prospect was pretty grim. And she decided to turn to Christian science, bought a copy of Science and Health, and began to read and ponder it. She liked it. It was logical. It taught that a basic intelligent cause has nothing in its nature out of which to originate or perpetuate, because an unintelligent thing is spinal arthritis. And she began to have some hope that if God didn't originate it, perhaps he could annihilate it. She employed a practitioner. They began to work together. The practitioner soon discovered that this woman was entertaining an habitual sense of resentment against the mother. Well, resentment is a close kin to hatred. And the practitioner pointed out that that wasn't good. How could she expect hope from the great basic intelligent cause when she was consenting to accept in her consciousness? And I saw a quality that was the very opposite of intelligence. But the practitioner also pointed out that there was no difficulty in getting rid of resentment. The antidote was just as hard. In the mind empowered ideas of loving kindness, forgiveness, mercy, goodwill. And the woman was humble enough to be willing to recognize that and to make an honest, consistent effort to entertain these positive thoughts toward her brother man. And it wasn't long before all the resentment had gone. Where did it go? It had seemed to be a grim reality and had been a grim reality to her for many, many months. And then it was gone. Of course, it went to oblivion. What made it go there? Force of intelligence. In him, it's idea. Well, what chance did resentment have? When her consciousness became enlightened with the supremacy of intelligent mind, the all-loving mind of man. Well, the work went on with the practitioner, and one night she awakened in some pain, and she turned on the light by a bedside table, began to read from Science and Health, and she came up in this paragraph. Rise in the strength of spirit to resist all that is unlike good. God has made man capable of this, and nothing can vitiate the ability and power divinely bestowed on man. She felt impelled to jump out of bed. Found herself free for all pain. Next morning, she proved that she'd been healed by running up and down stairs, something she hadn't been able to do for many, many months. Day or two later, the doorbell rang. It was the nurse from the local arthritis society. This woman had forgotten to cancel the arrangement made for the doctor. The nurse said, "I've come to heal you, or to treat you, for your spinal arthritis." Well, the woman says, "It's not yet. I've been healed by Christian Science." The nurse wouldn't believe it. She asked the woman if she would submit to a few simple tests. The woman agreed. After all, the last test was, "Kick your foot as high as your head, if you can." And the woman did. And the nurse said, "Well, you don't need me." Goodbye. But what healed the woman? That's the important question, of course. Here she was, fettered, down. By what? Ignorant, mindless, unintelligent, material forces. Medical opinion, and it was an honest way, I'm sure, said, "We don't know the answer. We haven't the wherewithal to break the bondage." But right there, the medical opinion said there was little or no hope were the forces that accomplished her liberation. She didn't have to make them. All she had to do was to be willing to make an honest, consistent effort to discover the nature of her intelligent thought, and to begin to recognize the loving power of that great intelligent thought. to provide for her health, harmony, utility, well-being. What was wrong with her medical opinion? It left God out. Christian science brought God in. Would you have it otherwise? Albert Einstein had a very deep regard for spiritual forces. In the New York Times in 1930, he was quoted as saying, "Arrows of hate have been shot at me too, but they have never hit me, because they belong to another world, with which I have nothing to do whatsoever. Arrows of hate, forces of ignorance, belong to another world, not to the world of truth." And apparently, Einstein had a sufficient recognition of the nature of a great basic intelligent cause to realize that that basic intelligent cause had given to him an individuality that was made superior to, immune from, ignorant, unintelligent, destructive forces of hate. Why not? Do you suppose that the great basic cause originates man to be destroyed by ignorant, unintelligent forces? Or does that basic cause have the ability to protect and to preserve the integrity and the continuity of its own evidence? No? Before Einstein moved from Switzerland to the United States, he counseled a young woman, good friend of Mrs. Einstein and himself, a young Austrian woman, to go forward with her preparation for the theatrical world. He saw that she had great talent. She followed his advice and has become one of the world's greatest actresses. During the last war, she had a very difficult time, yes, and there put a price upon her head. She escaped from Europe to England, then to the United States. And along the way, she found Christian science. It comforted her. She could understand something of the nature of God. She began to see that she could trust the power of intelligent mind to preserve her life, provide her with safety. But she was very eager to ask Einstein what he thought about her religion. When she got to New York, she telephoned him at Princeton, made an appointment, took a copy of Science and Health with her, went down, laid it before him on the table. He knew the book right away. And she looked him straight in the eye and said, "Well, what about it?" She has told Mrs. Seeley and me, and we've known her for a number of years, that Einstein looked at her with a very fatherly, friendly smile, looked her straight in the eye and said, "Blessed art thou." Well, in the time we've been reasoning together, I have endeavored to point out to you some simple verities in regard to the origin and power of thought. And we have seen how the standard after years and years of acquaintance with the physical force of electricity came to see that there was a far greater force, a really intelligent force that we need to understand. And we have seen how the young mother threatened with electrocution. and gained enough understanding of the supremacy of this original force and its ability to protect itself, so that she was fearless before the threat of electrocution. God to her wasn't far away. God to her was her very life, her real mind, her enduring substance. God was just as near to her as her consciousness. The true idea of God is still the ignorant fear that goes along with ignorance of God. Then we saw how the gentle Japanese gentleman in Tokyo appealed to his reading and study of science and health. Put off glasses, thick glasses, worn for 23 years. What made that change? The might of mind, the inference, and the true ideas that mind provided to enlighten his consciousness, to the true sense of his origin, his thought. And these enlightening ideas compel ignorant matter to yield to the mandate of intelligent mind, that man be able to see and discern and perceive unrestricted by ignorance, material forces. And so it was for the woman afflicted with arthritis. But still, all she had to do was to be willing to turn her thought away from ignorant matter and to begin to realize something of the supremacy of intelligent mind and the ability of that mind not only to cause and to originate, but to perpetuate the harmony of our being. It's all very simple, just as it should be, if one is willing to think.
We are sorry that this lecture has ended prematurely. We hope you have enjoyed it.